All right, we are broadcasting.
All right, okay, so welcome everyone. It is 7:01 p.m. on Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. This is the regular meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors. I will call the meeting to order by calling roll call. I'm here, President Stein, Vice President Padian.
Here.
Director Domer.
Here.
Director Kosel.
Yes.
Director Nagel.
Here.
And our interim general manager, Mary Morris Mayorga, is here. Fire Chief Michael Pagoni and our general counsel, John Bacher. So we will start the meeting as usual with oral communications, the place on the agenda that's reserved for board members and members of the public to make brief comments on items that are not on the agenda. I'd like to note that we do have 10 members of the public who are also on the line in addition to the panelists. So I will start with board members, and if everyone's okay with how I've just been going in alphabetical order to keep it simple, I'll keep doing that. If you'd like me to do something different, I'm happy to do that too. So let me start with you, Don, you're first. Any board member comment?
None.
All right, Janice, you're second.
Yes, I'd like to find out where we are on recruiting the permanent general manager. I thought that might be in your report or in Mary's report, but I'd like to know where Brent Ives is on that.
So I know we're not supposed to comment, but there was an agenda item. The agenda was updated before the 72-hour window.
And is his report in that?
Yes.
The item is
7.9
online, and I think what we'll do is ask Mary to share it when we get there, because it wasn't distributed late, and it wasn't distributed with the packet. And he may also be joining us tonight, so I'm kind of watching out for him.
Yeah, I just wanted an update, so that's fine.
Yeah, he has one for us. Thank you. Larry.
Yes, I'd just like to give a shout out to all the brave firefighters on the El Cerrito Kensington Fire Department. I realize that they're scattered all over the state at this point, or at least some of them are, and the rest of them are pulling long and extra shifts to cover. So I think we're very fortunate to have such a dedicated crew of people sitting in our firehouse guarding our town. And congrats to everybody.
Well said, Larry.
I will share that with them, and thank you for the comments.
Agree, Larry. Agree. Kevin.
No comments, Julie.
And my only comment is just that given that we have our general counsel with us tonight, we'd like to, of course, optimize the time that he's spending joining us. And so I think there's one item that I may pull from the consent calendar, because I think that's why he's here. And I want to let everybody know that I will probably move the administrative item 7.1 ahead of the president's report, because I think there may be some questions for him for that item too.
7.1
is evacuation messaging and public communication.
Okay.
There might be some questions for our general counsel during that item too. So I was going to move it up while he's here. So now I will move, excuse me, as I often do, I've skipped the public. I am not seeing.
Somebody's in the chat.
Let's see. Yeah, because I'm not seeing any hands raised. I have.
Enable gallery view. Let's see.
For me, I have gallery view.
Yeah.
But Mary's hosting it. So gallery
view. Where
we show in a checkerboard sort of fashion.
Gallery view. There we go. Is that, yeah. Mine's showing it. Is that?
And mine.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we got it.
All right. So I'm not seeing any other hands raised from the public. Are you, Mary?
No, I do not.
Okay. All right, then. I think we can move to the consent calendar. Tonight, the consent calendar consists of items 3.1 through 3.8. Any member of the board or the public can request to have an item removed from the consent calendar for full discussion. And we will, any items that are not removed, we will vote on adopting them. So let me go out to the board. Would any member of the board like to remove an item from the consent calendar?
I'd like to remove item 3.4.
All right, that's the budget.
Correct.
And I'd like to remove 3.7 and 3.8. 3.7 is policy 170, discrimination, harassment, retaliation, prevention, and 3.8 is policy 180, the complaint process. And would anyone else like to remove anything? And I'm not seeing any hands raised in the public. So
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt items 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, 3.5, and 3.6 of the consent calendar.
Thank you, Larry. Do
second.
I have
a second?
Who came in first with the second on that?
I think I was just a touch.
Okay. I think that was Don then. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor on the board. We have to do this by roll call. I'm in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Aye.
Okay. So Janice, what I'd like to do is go to 3.7 and 3.8 and 7.1 because Mr. Bacher is here, and then we can return to the budget.
That's fine.
All righty. Okay, so at the last meeting, we had a first reading of policy 170, discrimination, harassment, and retaliation prevention. We had a first reading of policy 180, complaint and investigation procedures. The minutes, which were just adopted, do note that the board had asked for Kevin to share his concerns about the policy with the board in between the last meeting and this meeting. I think there were 6 pages of written concern. And in my listening to the item again, the board thought they were largely satisfied with the policies as written, but there was no way to really address Kevin's concerns without seeing those concerns. And as far as I know, we haven't seen them unless I missed it. So I thought I'd ask you about that, Kevin.
Well, I think that that was not a formal request by the board. And I only learned from you the other day that I could not append those to the agenda packet unless the whole board reviewed it and decided we could. But inasmuch as the whole board was in favor of the policy, and in as much as our attorneys did not think that anything I wrote was worth considering, it does not seem to be a good use of time, so we should proceed and support the policy.
All right, then. So did anyone else then have any additional questions for our general counsel about those two policies before we consider a motion to adopt the resolutions for the policies? All right. Let's see. We do need to take them one at a time. But John, did you have any additional feedback for us since you were here, or are you simply making yourself available to answer any questions?
I was just here to make myself available. We did indicate that there would be some time written off on the matter previously, and I haven't completed that yet. But we will be offering a credit on the next invoice.
Okay, I think that was one of the concerns that Kevin had.
Yes.
I'll move the adoption of resolution 20-16, approving amendments to policy 170, discrimination, harassment, and retaliation prevention.
I second the motion.
Second from Larry, thank you. All right, any board member discussion on Janice's motion before I go out to the public for comment? Okay, let's look and see. We now have 17 members of the public on the line. And, pardon me, Mary?
I don't see any hands.
All right then, I will go ahead and call the vote for Janice's motion. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries and resolution 2016 is adopted.
So now, go ahead.
I was gonna say we move to item 3.8, go ahead.
I move the adoption of resolution 20-17 approving amendments to policy 180, complaint and investigation procedures.
Second, okay. I second.
Second, Larry, okay, discussion on the board on Janice's motion. All right, any comment from the public among the 17 members? I just want to make a comment. Janice, I'd like to thank you for spearheading the effort to put the policies in place. It was something that we needed to do, and you took it on when we didn't have district staff on board. So thank you for doing that. For the district. I think it was a really valuable service and thank you for your effort on that.
Thank you.
All right, I will call the vote. I vote in favor of adopting resolution 2017. Kevin?
Favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Aye.
Okay, resolution 2017 is adopted and the third aspect of our anti-discrimination policies was adopted separately on the consent calendar, so I think we're good to go. We can always enhance these policies, but I believe we've met the legal requirement for the district.
So. Can I ask Chief Pagoni to please share these new policies with the firefighters so they know and appreciate what we've done to provide a safe working environment for them?
I will do that.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, so the I'm going to skip forward to the administrative item 7.1, evacuation messaging and public communication. And I will say that this is an item that I put on the agenda. I've had some discussions back and forth with Chief Pagoni and also with Mary. And I will really welcome Chief Pagoni's input on this and also maybe a few questions for our general counsel. But what kind of motivated my concern is some communication coming from board members advising residents to leave town in certain instances. And when certain weather events are predicted, but have not actually occurred. And in addition, calling 911 in the event that you smell smoke. And, you know, I had some back and forth with Chief Pagoni about some of the concerns that get raised when these kind of directions are given, which are different than counseling people on how to be prepared in the event that you do have to evacuate, but actually sort of telling people to leave is a different matter. It kind of raises a possibility that we will cry wolf too many times, and when a real event occurs that everyone has to take seriously and leave, then we worry that they may not take it seriously. So I just wonder, Michael, would you mind just kind of giving us a little bit of feedback from the perspective of the fire department and emergency, professionals?
Sure, no problem whatsoever. When you first contacted me about this, I have to admit, not knowing, well, I guess backing up even a little bit further, as I've discussed with you, not only on this, but on other different issues, you know, while certain things from Nextdoor or other social media do come to our attention, usually through someone else emailing us, the social media is something that the fire department does not, we utilize it to get a message out. We don't monitor it to see what different people are saying or, you know, concerns or such as a whole different subject, a complaint somebody may have. Because as you know, even with non-fire related items, everybody has a complaint or an opinion about something. But in regards to our evacuation, you know, from a history standpoint, obviously evacuation has always been a major concern. Over the last year and 10 months or so, we've been putting in a lot of work. The district board has, you know, commissioned the traffic study. You know, we've been working with Zone Haven on doing the polygons, on doing the basically controlled evacuation zones. We have promoted community warning system, the CWS through the county. The item that you had brought forward was, you know, where there was a comment being made that if it's a red flag day, you know, basically you need to leave. Learning a little bit more, obviously part of that, part of some of the concerns there was if it's going to take you some time to leave, if it's going, you know, if you got kids, non-mobile people, you know, whatever the deal is, you know, it kind of came across as leave now, anytime it's a red flag. You know, the issue, I mean, I never want to say don't leave if you're uncomfortable. You know, I mean, obviously someone sitting in their home, extremely worried about the potential of a fire, you know, coming up out, fire coming from anywhere, it doesn't matter where it's coming from, you know, a potential of being trapped in their house or being trapped on the hills. You know, I never want to tell someone don't leave. The problem we have in telling people, you know, that if it's a red flag, you know, I mean, and especially if you have an issue, just leave, because, I mean, if we go over the last few years, we have had numerous red flag days. As a matter of fact, the one that when you had notified me of this, which was going to be a Monday, I believe a couple of hours into it, when, you know, had people been leaving, they rescinded the red flag. And, you know, and yes, people always have the chance of turning around and going back. But again, and you alluded to this about, you know, kind of like the, you know, the boy that cries wolf type thing. If people just get used to, you know, we're packing up and we're getting out of here every time it's a red flag, you know, after a while that will get tired. You know, I mean, it's kind of like how we get tired of the smoke being in the area. You know, and so it's going to get to a point where, you know, it's like, okay, it's just red flag, but it's not that bad of weather. Because again, most of the red flags that, you know, that we make notice on, they kind of apply, you know, it's a wide area that they call the East Bay Hills. Such as right now, while we are erring on the side of caution and saying we're in a red flag till Wednesday morning, till this morning, it didn't really, you know, if you look at the map closely, it didn't really include our area. You know, it was more kind of just, you know, a little east of us. But the whole thing is, they say Berkeley was under red flag, which we border. And, you know, there's fires going everywhere. So doesn't really, you know, it's erring on the side of caution, saying, you know, let's consider this a red flag. Be aware, you know, listen to the news, keep your eye on the weather. You know, be ready, you know, obviously always be ready to go. You know, the same, you know, I mean, the whole thing is that, you know, to me, it's, my belief is we're putting a lot of time into systems to get people evacuated. The plans that the PD is working on, you know, is let the system work. You know, but, you know, again, it comes into that thing that I don't ever want to say never leave, I just don't believe it's a proper, I don't know if it's prudent for the district to, you know, to support people every time there's a red flag, you know, whether you have an issue or not and being able to leave quickly, just leave. Because, you know, it is going to be an expense on them. It does open up, as we have seen in other areas where they do these evacuations, it opens it up to people that may not be as caring or honest and, you know, leads to break-ins. You know, that's been in my area up here. You know, we've had the evacuations last week of the areas, and the sheriffs were, you know, they were very busy with people coming in and, you know, basically looting going on. And that would probably, you know, I don't know if that would happen from one or two people leaving, but, you know, it's still something that you're opening yourselves up to for that. So, you know, if that's the message, as I told you, if that's the message that the board wants to put out there, you know, then, you know, it needs to be a unified message. You know, I, you know, we contract to provide service to the district, you know, regardless of my personal opinion and what I believe will work better, you know, it, I believe it should be a board decision as to, you know, the message that they want to put out there for it.
I had concern earlier this week when two members of the public posted all of these comments about what people should put in their go bag and they better get ready to leave now and stuff. There, I don't know what, if anything, we can do about members of the public doing that. And that's why I alerted you and thought maybe we ought to send out a nixel of what we think. But I don't particularly like board members or members of the public speaking in that quasi-official manner. Yeah. So I think we can do something to silence board members. I don't know what we do to silence well-meaning members of the public.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, even the comments from the board, I think, are, you know, I believe they're very well met messages. And I believe the people, the citizens on Nextdoor or other social media mean well also. And I think you're correct. There's no way that we are going to stop people from saying whatever they want to say as far as the public is concerned. You know, as a fire department, you know, we have done a lot of work to try and educate the public. You know, last year, you know, we put out, you know, all the effort to come up with that pamphlet that, you know, we mailed every single person. Plus, we've made it available at, well, when we used to have public events. You know, but when we've given them out to people that have requested them, we carry them in the engines. When we go on calls and someone asks about it, we give them two or three to share. And plus other, I mean, PG&E through the mail, through TV, through their website, they have done a tremendous amount of education, not only about their public safety power shutoffs, but they have also done a tremendous amount of education on how to be prepared, how to put a go bag together, what should go. You know, the American Red Cross has done a tremendous amount of work. There, you know, it's, if people really want to know what they should be putting together, you know, there's a lot of resources out there. But again, that's not going to stop the public from saying, you know, what they, you know, what they feel is the best. Everybody has an opinion on it. You know, I'm more concerned that, you know, as the department and, you know, as providing the service to the district, you know, that we support and put out the unified message that the district wants put out, you know, so that we're not, you know, we're not giving mixed messages out there, you know, and to what you're saying, Janice, it's, again, it's, and this is going back, I guess it's pushing a month ago or so now, was when they saw it, when the initial fires in Vacaville or in the Lake Berryessa fires, and we had a number of people calling in, you know, there's a fire in the canyon, you know, to the point, you know, some are saying, oh no, we see flames. And the one particular one, when a person got on the email and did an email blast, and I believe got on some sort of social media, and told people there's a fire in the canyon, you know, a lot of smoke, you know, evacuate, that within a few minutes, I was getting a phone call from Supervisor Joya going, what's going on in Kensington? You know, obviously, you know, with Kate Rauch, you know, living in the area, you know, this stuff goes quickly and, you know, the concerns are there. And I'm like, you know, I was just there. There was nothing burning. You know, I knew that Engine 65 was going on a smoke check, I think for about the third or fourth one, you know, in a couple of days, you know, but I'd been monitoring. I hadn't heard him say anything about a fire up there, you know, so, but it did get a number of people, you know, kind of in a panic. And while panic is hard to, you know, is hard to stop, you know, we want to do anything and everything possible to avoid it, you know, because that's what's going to lead to, you know, is going to lead to problems down the road if we have to do a real evacuation, you know, because we're going to get people evacuating and, you know, before and not in a controlled manner, and we're going to suddenly end up with our streets plugged up, you know, and jammed up, and then, you know, we're going to have a mess.
You know, maybe, Michael, what we have to be is a little bit more proactive in using, when we know comments like that are out there on social media, maybe we need to respond via Nixle or Mary posting on Nextdoor what's actually happening so that we disabuse people of all these rumors.
Well, I mean, that's definitely, you know, if that's the board's wishes, I mean, yes, that's definitely something to do. You know, as I said, it's, you know, normally as far as what we do as a department, we try as much as we can to avoid, you know, one-on-one conversations on social media. We basically post information.
Yeah, that's my preference. It's just a blanket statement. Yeah.
Well, so I guess I did have a couple questions for our general counsel just in the area of this. So for example, are you able to comment to us on any liability that the board as a governing body or an individual board member might face? For example, giving the kind of advice for a member for the public to do something such as evacuate under certain conditions that are maybe predicted but haven't happened and then something goes wrong. Do we as a body have a liability or the individual? And then my second question is, you know, sort of balancing the free speech right of board members versus, you know, the board's ability to make policy about what we should and should not really be publishing in this regard. Like what is the best way for the board to address that?
Okay, I guess I'll take the first question first. I think, you know, there's certainly a possibility that statements made by an individual board member or a staff person, you know, if somebody followed that advice and it created a scenario where somebody was injured or damaged, or their property was damaged, you could get a claim. I think the district would have good defenses for that. There are a number of defenses arising out of natural disasters and fires and things. So, I mean, there's a risk. And I think that risk could be avoided by, you know, having the district speak in a uniform way, as the fire chief suggests. When individual board members or individual staff members are communicating things, it creates more risk than would exist if the district was developing a uniform policy, thinking about the potential liability issues and staying on message, I guess. So that's my perspective on the first question. The second question, right, there's a individual board members have a First Amendment right to say things as long as they're not, you know, violating the First Amendment. The board, though, does have the ability to adopt reasonable policies around communicating on behalf of the district. Many boards have policies and mores and guidance that board members should not speak. You know, should not attribute their own individual statements to the agency. They should avoid doing that. And You know, another approach to this would be to adopt a uniform policy and have the board make a statement that this is our perspective about, this is the board policy about evacuation, and you know, board members should refrain from contradicting it. That would be one approach. Ultimately, though, the board, you know, if a board member wants to make a statement that's contrary to what board policy says, the board member can do that. There might be consequences at the board level where the board would censure them or just reprimand them in some form or fashion. The board member can't be removed for that. But those are where your controls are, is the ability to make a board statement against what an individual board member said, or adopt a censure motion or something like that. That's sort of the way this operates because of the way that, you know, individuals have a First Amendment right to make statements that they believe are appropriate. Did I answer both your questions?
I think so. I have a follow-on, but I'd like to give others a chance to make a comment.
I would like to, I agree completely with Chief Pagoni on this issue. I don't think, I don't really appreciate the value of an alerting system unless there is imminent danger, and a red flag warning is not imminent danger. It's a warning to the fire departments to staff up and be prepared. But in addition to the consequence of crying wolf, as you say, Julie, that eventually people might start to not even worry about red flag days, I think declaring red flag days to the public in general can create a tremendous amount of angst among the public. I know in Berkeley, which we border, and where I have a lot of friends from church, they put out a Nixle alert, AC alert on Nixle, that basically said, this is a red flag day, is starting at such and such a time and stopping at such and such a time. Review your evacuation route and park off street. Now, to me, that didn't convey any kind of imminent danger or any kind of command or suggestion that anybody leave town. But several people apparently took that to mean evacuation was imminent, and they got really upset, really worried, and there wasn't. Berkeley was in no danger and no fire danger whatsoever. It was just a red flag day. So these things happen. And I think we should definitely do everything we can to discourage telling people it's a red flag day, get out of town, or it's a red flag day, whatever. Until there's an imminent danger, I don't think any kind of alerts of that type are in order. And I agree with Chief Brochard of the Confire that they don't put them over CWS, because CWS is alerting people of imminent danger, and red flag days are not imminent danger. That's my opinion.
Larry, we've got this big red flag day sign right out in front of the what used to be the pharmacy there on Arlington, you know, in the median. So maybe we shouldn't put those signs out. I mean, your punchline to your story was so strange. I was nodding my head and going, oh, what a wonderful Nixle Berkeley puts out. We should do that too, because it never entered my mind that it was going to alarm people. But my concern is when we have well-motivated volunteer residents posting things and stuff, maybe we need to speak officially in a non-threatening, non-alarming way.
Well, Do you mean by we the fire department or we the board?
I think the chief and Mary versus Nixel and Mary making a posting on Nextdoor, and that the board members stay out of it.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I was also going to say that, I mean, maybe that would be it, but also if board members desire to publish articles in the Outlook on these topics, that we enact a requirement that the fire chief review the articles first and have some editorial or approval role, because sometimes I think the fire chief can find things that will other well-meaning people might not realize is the kind of advice that you don't want to give.
Well,
it's your Full Employment Act now. You can review all of and edit all of our publications.
Well, I mean, in my example, I'm sure the fire chief approved that Nixel alert and had no idea that people were going to be freaked out by it.
Yeah, it seems.
An unintended consequence, and we have to do our best to guard against unintended consequences.
Yeah.
All right. So, Don or Kevin, any questions or comments from you?
I think we could have a little more talk about it. I liked what the idea of maybe someone, one person is sending out a signal into various ways, and that would be easy to control.
Such as the general manager or the fire chief.
Yes.
El Cerrito sends out its own Nixels anyway. And Mary's been posting on Nextdoor. But if we could agree to just leave it to the fire department and to our general manager, who works with the fire chief on notices. So, Kevin, do you have any comment?
Well, yeah, as long as John is here. John, I agree with everything that you say. Although anybody can sue for any reason, an agency like ours has good defenses for putting out responsible information, even if some people misinterpret it or something happens to them in the course of following recommendations. There is First Amendment rights here, and people have to be very careful between when someone is speaking for the board and when they're not. And we have a policy about who can speak for the board. But unless you say you are speaking for the board, it cannot be assumed that you are. For example, tomorrow night, our friends across the way in the police board will entertain a social media policy. The last sentence of the first paragraph on the second page says, employees and elected or appointed officials' posts to non-district social media sites are a reflection of their own views and not necessarily those of the district, and should not suggest otherwise. When you hear people talking or writing in newspapers, they virtually never say that they are not speaking for an agency, unless they are departing from the view of an agency and they are employed by the agency. But board members have First Amendment rights, and the important part of this is that, as the CSDA manual says, if you don't speak up and talk about the issues, other people will do it for you. The public deserves the right to understand what its public officials think, how they vote, and why they vote. You cannot stifle free speech. As much as you want to, you can't silence board members. When I write anywhere, I never say I'm speaking for the board. I have never once said I'm speaking for the board. I don't know what anybody else does. And I never even identify myself as a board member unless it's necessary for identification purposes, but I don't do that. The default is not that Larry or I are speaking for the board. It is just not. and we have a right to express ourselves as private citizens. And so, whereas it is true that the board can adopt policy, they can say that the board members can't contradict it, but privately they can contradict whatever they want. That's First Amendment rights. I have checked that out with one of the top ACLU people in the country. So on that argument, you know, I think that what John said follows the guidelines of what boards can do when they're talking about officially speaking for the board. And as he points out, they cannot abridge First Amendment rights. So that's the first thing about the legal. There are other things about the factual and the public safety issues that also need to be gotten into. But that's what I would say to John. And, you know, we don't need to keep him any longer than he has to be here.
When someone writes an article with their name and then it says Kensington Fire Protection District Board as an identifier behind their name, would you agree that that creates, that that is speaking on behalf of the board?
No, it's identifying yourself as who you are. If I speak for the board or Larry does, we say we're speaking for the board. That's another thing.
But if you identify yourself in your article as a board member,
it doesn't mean we're speaking for the board. I mean, look at, for example, the Berkeley City Council. Some months ago, I sent all of you on the board an article from one of the Berkeley newspapers that in which a person had interviewed the Berkeley City Council members, I don't know if it was all of them, about a subject that was coming in front of the board. Every one of them weighed in on that. Not a single one of them said they were speaking for the board. Not a single one of them said they weren't speaking for the board. It goes without saying.
I don't disagree with what Director Padian is saying. I think he's making the points that are made in this context. One should take care to ensure that their communications, when you're identified as a board member, don't give the impression to the public that you're speaking on behalf of the board. Often you'll see an article, an op-ed or something in a local newspaper, and it will say, Kevin Padian, comma, director of the Kensington Fire Protection District. It just says that at the end. But there's nothing in the article to give the impression that he's speaking on behalf of the district. It's worded in a way that indicates it's his individual viewpoint. At the end of the day, I mean, that he has a First Amendment right. Any director has a First Amendment right to say what they're going to say. And you're not going to be able to prevent them from saying things or control what they print, publish, or say because of the First Amendment. But what you can do is adopt reasonable policies to prevent directors from speaking in a way that gives the public the impression that they're speaking on behalf of the district. And if they do that, then you can sanction them in some form or fashion. But you're not going to be able to prevent them from speaking or writing.
I agree with all of that, John, with a reservation on the last phrase. Because if you let it be known that you are on the board, but you are not speaking for the board, but you're giving, perfectly uncontroversial information, somebody reading it can presume, well, he's on the board or he's not speaking for the board, so maybe what he's saying is wrong. Or, maybe this is just not good information, so why should I listen to it? And this is a type of pre-censorship that I don't think I know of any districts or agencies that require you to do that as an elected official. The default, as we have already talked about, is that you are not speaking for the board unless you say so. And to have to put a codicil in the beginning to say you're not speaking for the board gives the impression that what you're about to say is maybe nonsense. And that's not something that a board should prejudge. And it's not something that a board should force a writer to pre-censor himself or herself about. So I would say that, yes, any board could, in theory, do this, but I think it could be challenged.
Kevin, I'm not sure I agree with the idea that saying that you're not speaking for the board makes whatever you have to say any less worthy. I make the attempt whenever I'm talking about something which is related to the board to specifically say, well, I can't speak for the board, but my opinion is. And I don't think that diminishes the worth of my opinion. It just says that this is my opinion. It's not the opinion of the board.
So we do that, Larry, normally, like if you and I go to Diablo Fire Safety Council meeting or a meeting like that, and we always say that to the group like that, that we're not speaking for the board. But you don't have to do that every time you open your mouth.
No, you don't have, not every, that's correct. But right. I don't think it hurts. I think it's a good practice to do that. And I know you and I do that when we, especially when we talk to our sister organization, the KPPCSD, we try to make it very clear to everybody that we're not talking for the board, but we're there representing ourselves.
Yes, because that's you're right, because that's a forum where it could be misinterpreted because it's another official government forum. We can see that. But the rest of this is really not necessary. So, I mean, I think it's we can move on if people want to the actual factual considerations regarding some of the statements that have been made tonight, unless anybody has any other ideas about legal issues.
I think the agenda item was just about messaging. As I introduced the item, I had my own set of dialogues with our fire chief, and we just wanted to explore what options are available for the board to try to speak with one voice about this, so that the messages that we're giving are sage and safe, don't create panic, and follow the standards that a public safety professional would give.
Well, that's actually not what your item says. It simply says evacuation messaging and public communication, which is a much broader subject. And then the things that you've talked about, Julie, go way beyond what you just said. They related to factual issues. So maybe, you know, we should straighten out some of those factual issues, because I think that that's something that you should know. And I agree, it's good to check things with people. And if I may start with the Outlook article on the cemetery, which along with the one that Larry and I did on the red flag warnings, they both came out in the last Outlook issue, although one was written far before, but then they didn't publish. And they both conveyed pretty much the same information at the end of the article. And so I want to just explain to you a July 29th email that I got from Chief Pagoni. I had written to him the day before, I think. I'd written to him and to Larry and to Officer Harms and to Chief Schuld and to Battalion Chief Grupalo. And this is what I said very quickly, I hope. Mike and Joe, the signs are now up in the cemetery. Linnea wants a short article, a draft of which is attached. It seemed good to have people from both police and fire as authors, so if one of you wants to take my place, please let me know. Otherwise, the important thing is the last paragraph in which we discuss evacuation and pre-evacuation plans. Mike and Joe, do you see any red flags, no pun intended, in the wording? If not, we'll proceed. Obviously, anyone else should weigh in with suggestions, but we can't make the piece longer. Thanks so much. The message I got back the same night from Chief Pagoni said this. Good evening, Kevin. The article looks fine to me. I would not change the author on this. Brad, Larry, and you have put a lot of great effort into this thing with the county and Sunset representatives and should be noted. Thank you for the update. I don't normally read email messages. They're private. But I think it should be understood that I checked not only with Mike, but with four other safety officials, plus Larry. And I got back that message from him. No one else objected. In fact, either one or two other people said, yeah, it looks fine. So I am checking. That sounds like approval to me. And, I think that one of the problems here is that messaging on evacuation and pre-evacuation gets very confused. For example, on a week ago, Wednesday morning, we had a Wildcat Canyon protection meeting that John Joy's office organized. And Chief Richard and Chief Pagoni and a number of people were there. And Meredith Gerhardt from the county explained some things about evacuation planning that I don't think a lot of people would know. John Joy has stressed, first of all, that evacuation is a matter of local authority. The county's not going to do this. It's not going to be directed by OES, but locally. And Meredith confirmed this. There is no countywide evacuation plan. So this is going to be a localized thing. So the chief, as usual, our chief, made some great comments. He was in his car. And he stressed, first of all, and I wrote this down straight away because it all made a lot of sense to me. He said, the most important thing here is situational awareness. You have to be aware of your situation, where you are and what is around you. He said then, you should report if you see smoke or if you smell smoke inside or outside. Now, obviously, he doesn't mean walking out on a day like today where we've been under smoke for 2 weeks. If you can't see where smoke is, and you often can't, because we're so vegetated and built up and dark topography is complex. But if you smell smoke, you just try to find out where it is and call 911. Don't alert social media. I mean, that's what the chief is primarily concerned about. He's absolutely right. He then said, if you're nervous, you should evacuate. Don't be stuck in your house if you feel you need to leave. No system is flawless. I find that completely consistent with everything that we've always talked about. When I posted on Nextdoor about this, a post that you didn't like, what I said was, under these conditions, the same one that the chief mentioned earlier tonight, if you have a lot of kids, if you've got sick people or people with limited mobility, don't wait to be told to evacuate. You should get out. And I wrote, the words I wrote were in boldface, consider pre-evacuating. And what was said at the top of the meeting here on this subject indicated that I was telling people to leave and that red flag day, you need to leave. Red flag day, just leave. That is, I never said anything like that. Larry never said anything like that.
Kevin, my timer just went off here, and I'm trying to make it stop. I think we've got the gist of your message. What I take from our general counsel is that the board does have the right to put some policies in place if we'd like to define how board members, some limitations on communicating on behalf of the board.
I think you should take some different messages away from this, Julie, that you cannot abridge First Amendment rights and that people who are board members have the right to speak personally, that they do not speak for the board unless they say they are speaking for the board. And that is something that you should mainly be taking away, because you can make a repressive policy, but it could be challenged. You cannot censor people.
Thanks, Kevin. Any other comments then from the board? Or I had thought about proposing an action that if we put articles in the Outlook or social media that the chief review them. Also thought of limiting communications on these matters to the fire chief and our general manager. But I don't know if anyone's ready to take any of that sort of action at this time.
Why don't you give us a chance to think about it over the next month? And I've disappeared, by the way, because I went to read a chat and now I can't get your picture or my pictures back. So, Mary, I'm a Luddite. Can you fix me?
We see you. You may just have to get your Zoom window back. We can actually see you.
All right. I have a big Zoom word in the middle of my screen and nothing else because I read and tried to respond to a chat by a member of the public. And then we can't respond to members of the public on my thing. All you can do is respond to everyone else.
Yeah, I think that with respect to public comment, you know, it's just simpler if we stick to our formal means of asking people to raise their hand and calling on them. Instead of entertaining chats. So since there's no action, we're not required to take public comment. Were you going to say something?
If an item's on the agenda, you should take.
I was just going to say I would take it anyway, but maybe you're correct. Yeah. So we have 16 members of the public on the line. Would anyone like to make a comment?
There is one hand raised.
Yeah. Are you going to hand
David Spath.
Thanks, Julie. All this tells me is that you need to come up with a consistent and uniform message on wildfire evacuation. And actually, if you look at the city of Berkeley's website and their wildfire evacuation, it's very well done. It's a simple one page. It's well done, as I said, and straightforward. And the other thing that strikes me is that there needs to be consistency between the various communities in their messaging on the hills. If Berkeley's going to say something about evacuation planning and possibly evacuating even if there isn't a fire or a message for evacuation, then Kensington and El Cerrito should at least have something consistent with that. So, I mean, that's a little bit beyond what you've been discussing here, but I think it really goes to having some consistency on how you message this whole thing. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Danielle Madugo has a hand up.
Let me do this. All right. We can hear you, Danielle. There we go.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I just thought I'd reiterate what I wrote in the chat, which was, since I've recently become Area 3 coordinator in Kensington, district coordinator, I've been sending out little emails just reminding block residents and residents on some other streets as well about the red flag warnings. And I have received numerous grateful responses because usually I just let them know the timing. I give them a go bag list, and many of them had not even realized the new evacuation route, which I was surprised because I saw the Outlook article. So everyone was pretty grateful for that information. And I didn't receive anybody who was really felt like they needed to evacuate right away. And I know some of the people who I talked to, they asked why they weren't getting, you know, an AC alert type message from the fire department. So I think my opinion is that I think if Kensington Fire could send out an NICFL alert, like AC alert, like the Berkeley one, you know, and add at the bottom, this is not an official alert notice. This is a reminder to become prepared in the event of one. I think the fire department can share really important information and kind of bring it to everybody's attention, because some people don't pay attention and some people don't know where to go look for the information to become prepared. And I think becoming prepared is really one of the first and necessary steps during these times. It's going to help our residents.
Thank you. Paul Moss has his hand up.
Yes. Where did he go? There he is. Unmute. I tried to unmute.
Can you unmute him, Mary, please?
I tried.
Nuts.
All right, Paul. I've clicked my unmute and it's not allowing. I'll try muting.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Ah, there we go. All right. Yes. Sorry. There you go.
I think I did some. Okay. I just want to comment that I agree with Directors Nagel and Padian, and want to piggyback on what Chief Pagoni and David and Danielle said, that in my opinion, a key issue here is alerting the public in a proper way that's clearly defined. What was said earlier to me is really important, that the red flag issue, I'm going to call it, is really just a warning. It is not really a warning by the NOAA definitions. They're the ones that coined these terms. If you look up storm warning, for example, under NOAA, they mean the conditions are not just ideal, it's practically in your face, it's imminent. And they use the word for storm alert is when conditions are could lead to that. And it's just that, an alert. And it's a shame, I think, that we can't do anything about it, that NOAA mixes these terms alert and warning. They call the a red flag warning, but they would call they call the same kind of conditions for a storm, they call it an alert. This is really more of an alert. And I think it really needs to be conveyed to the public that what already other people that I've mentioned said, this is not an imminent condition that you want to just vacate and just leave like that, unless you feel uncomfortable, which makes sense. And by the way, I had two people on my street in Kensington leave on Sunday night because of the warning. And they had reasons to. I'm not going to go into it. They had personal reasons, and that made a lot of sense to me as to why they left. I think what also, and this might be a tiny bit of a sidebar, and I'll try to be very brief about it, but I think what's equally important in this discussion or needs to be brought up soon is that these warnings, as David more or less implied, need to be timely, accurate, and consistent. If you look back, the Kensington warning from the Kensington Fire Department, as I recall, came out at 9:26. This is for the red flag warning. Came out at 9:26 Monday, when NOAA issued it and everybody else was issuing it, for 10 p.m. Sunday night. Why was it almost 12 hours late? Now, this didn't matter this time, but it could have been. And just as importantly, I don't think I'm wrong on this, but as I recall the August 22 red flag warning incident, Kensington never put out an alert. And I really looked into that, and I can tell you they didn't. I even questioned and called the station on the Arlington about it, talked to a couple people. Didn't complain. I simply wanted to know if they agreed it was in fact a red flag warning or alert, whatever you want to call it, day. They looked it up and agreed, and that was the last I ever heard from them. I did not try to tell them what to do. I just assumed that it would come out shortly. So it's not just what it is and how it's conveyed, but these things need to be used in a timely and accurate fashion. That's all.
Thank you. All right, any further public comment? I'm not seeing any other hands raised.
Could I just add that Paul is exactly right, and we need to have a lot more talk about this, about not just a policy for speaking, but actually the substance of what Kensington faces in terms of the danger in fire, which is extreme. It has not been addressed ever by any document that's been produced by the county or by El Cerrito or by El Cerrito in concert with anybody else. It's not their business to do so, but people don't understand what pre-evacuation warning means, an evacuation warning means, and what a mandatory evacuation order. And it says, honestly, that if this is in your yellow El Cerrito and Kensington Residents Guide to Wildfire Preparedness and Evacuation, I want to say that they say that law enforcement agencies may issue a pre-evacuation warning, but doesn't say they have to. And so what that booklet says, if you feel you're in danger, consider evacuating early before the mandatory evacuation offer given. Traffic will be lighter and you can get out safely. This also helps firefighters keep roads clear of congestion and lets them move more freely to do the job. But in the document that the chief is presenting us tonight on page A64, it says voluntary evacuation may result in traffic congestion and raise concerns about protection of property. So it seems like you have two documents in the same place that are contradicting each other. We clearly have more discussion about this.
I'm sorry. That's getting into another topic. very full night ahead, including approving our budget and a number of other things. So we could certainly agendize that as another topic. So anybody else have any questions for our general counsel? John, it was very helpful to me to really kind of understand the situation and what the board is able to do and the general parameters. So thank you very much.
Yeah, glad to help. Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, John. Good to see you.
All right. To see you, too.
Okay. So unless someone has a motion to make, which I'm not really hearing one, I think I'd like to suggest we move to the budget. So Janice, you removed the budget from the consent calendar, and I had also planned to do it myself if you hadn't, but I'll let you go first. Well, maybe we should let Mary present the present it very quickly, staff comments on the budget, and then you're muted, I think, Janice.
Yes, she is.
All right, should we just go straight to Janice's question? Why don't we go straight to Janice?
Oh, now she's muted. Janice, she's muted.
You're muted, Janice.
I think I'm not now.
There you go. All right. Question. Cool. Yes.
Okay, do you want to make a presentation first, Mary? Is that what...
I could quickly. The budget is presented for final adoption. What this budget is the one that was approved in June with the modifications as listed in the background. I tried to detail each of them out so you'd know what had changed. And also the projected amounts have been updated with additional information. And some of the other pieces of the document mostly have been updated. There are a couple of items in the verbiage that I need to update with the assistance of fire, but they're very busy right now. So we'll get that updated, but it's not a dollar amount. It's a verbiage narrative component of the document. So basically, it's just the changes for mostly increasing the property taxes 2% projected each year. Decreasing firefighter expense based on actual, increasing office wages for the newly authorized positions, legal fees to what we're hoping they would be based on historical, and we'll do our very best to minimize, decreasing accounting to reflect the newly authorized positions, increase IT and equipment based on district needs and future system updates, and then reducing the feasibility study based on estimated needs, including a grant writer for potential grant projects, and the public safety building consultant to reflect the project that's currently ongoing, and decreasing temporary services due to the authorized positions, and increasing building alarm based on projection. And those are mostly all of the changes. So I'm happy to answer your questions.
Mary, I have one question and that has to do with the fact that we're projecting a fairly, the question is, are we being fairly conservative about projecting the property taxes? I would expect that property taxes are going to drop due to COVID, due to the fact that housing prices are falling. Is this projection, which is 90% of our budget, budgeted revenue, is it, you feel this is fairly accurate, fairly conservative, fairly what?
So far, I do. Everyone that I have gotten information from says that Kensington actually performs a bit differently with property taxes. I had initially kept it flat, but the information that I'm getting is that it will increase approximately 2%. It might be more, but I'm keeping it very low. And when you do see those drops that are kind of impacting from COVID, those types of situations. Agencies will note those in a couple of years. So I'll know very early in this fiscal year by December what it's looking like, and I'll have more information there. If I need to make a change, I'll certainly come forward, but I've kept it very minimal.
I think what they're reporting in the news also, Larry, is that rents are dropping, but property values are increasing. It's just the rental market is dropping, not the housing market.
Ah, okay. I guess it depends upon which newspaper you read, but as long as we're being fairly conservative about this, I'm a little anxious about the fact that it hasn't dropped, or we're not projecting more of a drop than we are, but.
We'll continue to monitor that and update it as soon as we have any information that changes what we predict.
Thank you.
Larry, Janice, did you want to?
Let me tell you what my concerns are, and I'm not going to go through them all, or we're not going to get any further on the agenda. I have a couple primary concerns, and then I'll list the others kind of seriatim. Later on this evening, we're going to get to the building, but I don't think I'm talking out of turn when I say that the current estimates now are a renovation and relocation cost of $6.7 million. To me, that means that we should be on a bare bones budget, and we're not. Our administrative costs are up 400% since Brenda left us in October. Our legal fees are at an unprecedented amount. They were budgeted for 55, and now in the current iteration, it indicates that we should top 67,000 this year, which means we're getting 20 to 30 hours a month of legal time, which I find extraordinary. When we're facing that kind of expenditure on renovation of the building, I think we've got to bite the bullet on legal fees. I think we have to rethink the grant writer. I'm concerned about things like hiring an emergency preparedness individual. I'm concerned about leasing space rather than making do by putting people in the conference room. I'm concerned about emergency radio giveaways. So I was shocked by the amount of renovation costs and how generous this budget is, because I do not consider it a bare bones budget. And those legal fees are unprecedented in my years on the board. We rarely topped more than $5,000 to $10,000 unless we were in active litigation.
I have some comments, but first, Don, do you have any comments?
No, I was just trying to look at the numbers here. Janice, construction has gone up about 10% a year. It may have flattened out recently. So this project is costing more now than it would have several years ago. So
it's a big number.
It's a big number. We have an unanswered elevator problem, but we can't exceed a half of the replacement value. So we are stuck with that. They both will go up at the same time. But you're right. It has gone up, and you've heard me scream about getting a schedule, because I think I said before, this is costing us money not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that we'll know a little better when we get some drawings done where we are with that. But we do have that limit we have to live with, which just sort of breaks on its own.
All right, that's it for you, Don.
I think so. I mean, it's
back to you.
But. Yeah, I mean, we know what it is projected. I thought you were a little bit high on your number there, but not much, Janice.
Kevin, do you have any comments? You're muted, I think.
Trying to unmute.
Okay, sorry. Yes, only that I think that the figure of 15,000 for a grant writer was actually marked down from the original budget from last year that I think we had as much as 40 or 60,000. And partway through the year, it was determined that we could actually take some of that money out because we were not able to get as far along with this as we could because Brenda gone, RGS in. And so we took that. And so I think that Mary is taking the reduced figure from the previous year. This year, however, we could take the opportunity to look for substantial grant money because the county has recently been eligible for FEMA money, a new set of FEMA grants. And those grants, at least in the present administration, are administered by Tetra Tech, and they are portioned out to individual districts in the county who can apply for them. And this would be an excellent opportunity to look into what we can get for things like the public safety building, as well as some of the other initiatives we can do. So if we could restore the 15,060, it might give us more wiggle room in future to use the opportunity to gain a lot more money back and repay that position if we're successful.
I had been planning on recommending something that in the context of Janice's remarks, I don't know if it'll be well received, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there anyway. I went up and walked around the community center yesterday. I had been hearing, you know, the building is pretty much ready to go. I had been hearing folks talk about how ragged the landscaping had become. Not really dug up because of the construction itself, but a bit neglected. And I remembered that we did have that discussion about continuing with a scaled down version of the demonstration garden. There's been a certain amount of investment that's been put into the demonstration garden, and is my understanding anyway, studying plants that would be good to use in a demonstration garden, and we had had some recommendations. So I had been planning to recommend that we consider reinstating a modest budget for a demonstration garden around the community center, which we had talked about last year. I'm not exactly sure what the amount would be. I thought we talked about $5,000 last year. Janice, you probably have a better sense of that from having worked on the project yourself more closely. So I don't know. And of course, that's something I'm throwing out there that we wouldn't even have to decide tonight. But I thought it might be timely to consider that. It was one of the points in the wildfire action plan that this board approved a couple of years ago. I also think it would be useful, although time consuming for Mary, but useful to see an analysis of legal fees. We've had a lot of different things happen this year, including transitions. And we went for a long time without any employees. So for instance, just the whole process of bringing Mary on board, the only entity available to do it for us was our attorney. When we talked about the anti-discrimination policy, I had asked whether we wanted to get a budget for that project before proceeding, and there was no interest in that. And I think it turned out to be a very expensive project. We needed to do it. But we've had quite a few one-time things that have resulted in high legal fees. There have been other things that I'm not really going to talk about that were also one-time occurrences that I would hope would not occur again, but maybe if the board was interested, some kind of analysis of how we've used the attorney in the past year would be helpful. My personal experience in watching how the law firm works is that I think there may be ways to work with them more cost effectively than the way they would approach a project on their own. So that might also be something that we could think about.
I guess my comment on the legal fees would be they have, I understand why they're high this year, but I hope and I believe that this is a sort of a one-timer, and I'm not sure why. So we budgeted 53.6 for this year, and next year we're budgeting 55. And I would think that we'd be able to get by with more like the traditional 10,000 a year that we did in years previous. Now, I realized we were high in 2019. I believe that was because of this
litigation with CalPERS.
CalPERS suit, was it not?
Correct.
So that's a one time, unless we know for sure that there's other former employees who are going to, or the CalPERS is going to sue us for other former employees. So it isn't clear to me why we have $55,000 in the budget for legal fees. I would think that could be considerably less. And I didn't see, somebody mentioned a fire preparedness official. I don't see that in the budget.
I don't think it's
in your committee report.
It's later in the agenda, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The only thing that's in the budget is the grant writer, right? That's new. The
correct.
Grant writer.
Correct.
Well, it's not new. It's been there, Larry, but it was reduced. And so we were just talking about the opportunity of restoring some of that fund so we could use it more effectively. With respect to the demonstration garden, Lynn Dewey just sent us all a message saying the KCC just approved $15,000 for landscaping at the community center and installing a sprinkler system. And she suggests that if we want to do a demo garden, you could pony onto that. That's a potential idea. But the thing that the demonstration garden needed that it didn't have was both a scientific plan and an educational plan. And before I would consider a demonstration garden, which I think could be a very nice idea, we would need to have that. We can't just give it a budget and have people go out and buy plants.
I think that goes without saying. Also, I'd like to not use the chat function. I think just keep it structured, as I mentioned. We'll go to public comment at that portion of the item and call on people. So, all right. Do we have a motion to do anything specific to change the budget that Mary's presented? Because otherwise, I think our job is to adopt the budget.
So we're adopting it, but we're going to re-review it in half a year, right?
Yes.
The finance committee can get back to us, and we're going to approve it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a statutory constraint tonight, Larry. We have to adopt a budget tonight. But I wanted to make it very clear, I'm quite unhappy with the number of items in the budget. But I recognize we're under a statutory mandate to adopt a formal budget tonight.
Well, given that, I will make a motion that we adopt the budget for fiscal year 2021 as proposed in the agenda.
And I would make a friendly amendment and that we review it in depth in February.
I'll accept that amendment.
And I would make a friendly amendment that we restore the grant writer budget to $40,000 and see where we are.
You have to decide if that's friendly, Larry.
Can I just clarify that the actual action item is to adopt the resolution? So I think that if someone wants to actually change a line item in the budget, we should do that and then adopt the resolution with the recognized or agreed upon change to the budget.
Yeah, but Larry made the motion before I could say that.
Well, I'm just clarifying that the motion should be to adopt resolution 2013.
Okay, I will rephrase the my motion to, so that it reads, I move that we adopt resolution 2013 as laid out in the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Now, do I have a second for Larry's motion?
Second.
All right, any further board discussion before I go to the public? Okay, let's see, we have 16 folks on the line. Does anyone from the public want to raise your hand to make a comment about the budget? I'm not seeing a hand raised in the public, so I will.
Yes, you have. Mabry Benson just raised her hand.
Okay, great. Mary, do you want to go? Right.
Yeah. Mabry, let's see. I tried to unmute. There we go.
I think.
Yes.
I did it. Okay, you can hear me?
We can.
Thumbs
yes.
up.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point, the district doesn't, we can forego funding the radios, and there was another item that was sort of like that, was an emergency.
An emergency coordinator.
But they're not
in the budget.
They're not in the budget.
They're not in the budget. Okay, the radios weren't in the budget either.
No.
Okay, I heard the mention, so that's why I thought they were. Okay, then scratch my comment. I'll mute myself again.
All right, thank you.
You'll hear about them later this evening, Mabry.
Okay, if I can stay awake.
I don't see any other hands raised.
No.
So I will go ahead and call the vote. So I vote in favor of Larry's motion to adopt the budget resolution. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Yes.
Barry?
Yes.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. May I ask, we're about halfway through the meeting. Would anyone like a 5-minute break?
No, because we're running so slow right now.
Yeah. All right, just let me know as we go along if anybody needs a break. Okay, so I think I'm just going to pass on the president's report. I don't have anything special to report tonight. I will move on to the interim general manager's report. Mary?
Okay. The first item I have listed is report on the status of the fire danger sign, just a verbal. There was nothing included in the packet. This is a fire danger sign that I believe was purchased back in March, or we received it in March. I was alerted to this by Director Padian, and we're in progress with getting that sign installed. It requires an encroachment permit with the county. I've got that document, and I'll be working with Chief Pagoni on the placement. We have to provide pictures and get the work scheduled, so that may take couple of weeks. I don't know how fast the county moves with those permits, but we'll get that in progress as quickly as we can. Any questions on that one? Okay. And my next item is my action plan update. As you'll recall, this is something that I do each month. It's based on the expectations of the interim general manager that were established by contract. And I take those, they're simply listed on the left as the goals, percentage complete, and some of the milestones that might have occurred related to those, and then next steps that are still outstanding. This month, there's been a bit more in item 2, developing working relationships with other agencies, with the county departments I've been working with, the auditor, controller, the assessor with the special tax billing, Department of Information Technology, who provides some reporting related to that, and Public Works related to the encroachment permit. Related to the budget, I have that now listed at 100% with anticipated adoption this evening, which we've had. We'll of course continue to monitor that, make any changes as needed. With oversight of the public safety building, That's increased just a little bit with the activity going on by the architect with respect to the county evaluation, and I'll be speaking to that later in item 7.5 and go over the project decisioning and financing related to that item. With respect to payments, made a little progress there with last month's approval of authorizing the interim general manager to pay bills and begin reporting. We haven't incorporated that this month, but we'll start working on that next month. And then with respect to the contract, a little bit more progress there as we learn more about the contract services and take a look at what's included. And then we look at what we can do in the future. And I'll be doing a review of that as in my remaining time. And then the information technology serving with them, we've actually encountered some issues with the VPN, virtual private network, recently with encountering issues with multiple individuals accessing the system that they have some suggestions for. I'm not ready to kind of point us in the direction of an option yet, but they do have some options. They're not terribly expensive, but they'd be best for the district going forward, regardless of having one or two employees. It would be better and the system would be a bit more stable, but we'll talk about that later at another meeting. Development of a long-term financial plan. This is made progress with projecting reserves and potential funding for the public safety building renovation that we'll talk about later. And then with the last item with the final report, that's kind of ongoing where I put together an administrative manual where I'll make sure that the person taking the position next has all of the information that they need to, you know where things are. I've stumbled across a lot of things and there's probably more that I'll encounter, but to put that all in one place is really helpful for the individual taking over. Happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
I have questions. I don't know when you have, what order you want to go, Julie.
Let's just do the usual real quick. Don, comments? Don, any comments from you, Don?
No.
Janice, I think you're next alphabetically.
Okay, I have comments with respect to item 12, preparation of our application for a transparency certificate of excellence and district of distinction status. Before you joined us, Mary, last August, we finally reached qualification for renewal when Don finally completed his sexual harassment training. And so we've been waiting now 13 months to do the paperwork for those two accolades from the California Special District Association. I have concerns now that we may no longer qualify. I'm not sure that we've produced enough fire plugs, our community newsletters to meet the District of Distinction. And I'm not persuaded that all members are current on their education requirement. So Don, have you taken your ethics training in the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think I'm current.
Are you current? Okay.
I believe so.
Everyone actually is current.
Okay. Then our problem would be we may not have met the publication requirement. So I'd like you to check into that. And I would hope that sometime in the next month or two, we would be able to complete the paperwork that's been sitting there for 13 months.
Definitely. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Larry, do you have any comments?
I have a question. This action plan, what is the time frame of this? Are all of these things going to be 100% in a month, a year, 10 years, or what kind of time frame goes with these plan? This plan.
So this was the action plan, the expectations for the interim general manager. So initially when I was appointed to that position, we'll say it was until a permanent general manager were hired, maybe 6 months. So that is my goal for completing is within the time frame of a permanent general manager being hired. My goal is to do my very best to complete all of these.
Okay, so that would be that would be a time frame, probably the end of this year, end of this calendar year.
Yes, or before.
Mm-hmm. Even before, yeah.
And for example, it's now that you've finished the fiscal year 2021 budget, it's 100% complete. Mm-hmm. But shouldn't there be another item that pops up, which is 0% complete, which is prepare the 2021-2022 budget? Or begin the preparation of that?
Well, that won't actually need to start quite yet. Typically, when you're preparing a budget that's on a fiscal year basis, you would begin preparing January, February of the next year. So that would be in 2021.
Okay, and that's outside of the time frame of this document.
Yes.
Okay. Thank
Larry,
you.
You might remember, Larry, when we on the night that we hired Mary, which was I think May 13th, we also had a set of expectations for the interim general manager that the board approved, and so this is actually the list of expectations that we approved that night. So Mary's actually reporting against that.
I don't remember that we put a time frame on it when we first approved it, but I just wanted to make sure that the time frame is December 31st, 2020, I think. Is that what I heard?
Six month period? May or
November, December.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you have any comments, Kevin?
Oh, no, only just to help, if it'll help Mary with Janice's inquiry with respect to the fire plug. All of the text was turned into RGS many months ago, I think probably April, before you got here. Yeah. And they were supposed to get someone to format it who knew what they were doing. And that is the last that I heard of it. And it kind of bothered me. And I'm glad Janice brought it up because I don't know what happened to the fire plug. And I mean, we can't do a spring issue now. We'll be lucky if we could get out a fall issue. But it's another thing that I believe that they dropped the ball on because I just never heard the end of it. Maybe someone else did.
Yeah, and so Julie actually provided me with what they had, and my intention is to take that on. I haven't had the opportunity to, but we'll definitely make that a priority as well.
But weren't they paid to put it out? I mean, they paid a consult. I don't know that those were administrative details, but I believe that they engaged someone who was a publisher on this and was going to set it out and, you know, get it through the system and mailed out. But I mean, that was the goal. They were supposed to do that.
You know, that happened really close to the transition with Mary. So the person did spend about an hour or two laying it out, but then they were going through a process of figuring out where to get it printed. Oh. And then I think the transition happened.
Okay. So that was an independent person they hired, not one of their usual people, right?
Well, all of their people are independent.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
So when was the last official fire plug
public? Last fall. Last fall.
Last what?
Last fall.
Fall of 2019.
Yeah.
So we missed spring of 2020 and we missed fall of 2020 and we're hoping to do spring of 2021. Is that what the plan?
Well, we haven't missed fall of 2020 yet. And I think we'd have to take a look at what's in there because some of it's obviously dated. It would be easy to provide new text. So I wouldn't personally go ahead with what was put out there before, but you know, RGS dropped the ball on it and there we are.
Yeah.
I think some of it's still relevant.
Yes, it is.
So we probably have to be updated. A fall of 2020 out.
I think we could.
Although this is fall of 2020, isn't it?
It usually goes out in October, I believe. So there's some time, it kind of lines up with the National Fire Prevention Week, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we need to get an agency in order.
pretty well formatted.
Okay. So. Yeah. If somebody has to do it and run through the thing, I don't know how to do that. That's in the
Why don't we keep Mary's report moving, because you had one more thing about a shredding event possibility.
Yeah, the at the last meeting, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but we've had a lot of requests, a lot of interest for the shredding event, given the current pandemic and kind of our limitations. We're not certain that we could hold it. Some ideas floated around about trying to get Boys and Girl Scouts to assist with the event, kind of make it more of a community event, even more so. And I'm not certain that the firefighters could be involved at all. So I wanted to get feedback on the board's position on holding that shredding event.
I don't think it's a good idea to involve our firefighters when they're our first responders and exposing them to that many members of the community. By the same token, I can't ask scouts' parents to put those little kids at risk either. So I'm a big proponent of the shredding event, but I'm afraid we're going to have to put it off for reasons of safety.
I agree
with that as well.
That makes sense.
I hate to do it because it's a popular event, and I know I've got three boxes of stuff to shred, and I'm probably not the most prolific shredder, but I don't think it, unless there was some way of doing a contactless shredding event, and I'm not sure how you would do that.
Right. Do we have any public comment on Mary's report?
I do not see any.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
All right. So we move on to item 7.2, reviewing the final version of the letter regarding the camera zone. One more piece.
I think I forgot my
fire chief's report.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I did. Thank you, Michael. Sorry about that. I was looking at a big circle I had on my paper here.
You did 7.1, so it seemed logical to go to 7.2.
That's good. What happened there?
Anyway, you received the activity report for last month. The good news is there was less calls last month. Mostly a drop in medicals and an increase in what we would call either false calls or service calls, which arrived from doing a number of smoke checks. But the medical-wise, things were down. One less call within the community of Kensington, or no, two less calls. 29 total calls within the community. 54 calls. Total for engine 65. While nothing was very serious, there were three fire events in the community. We had a potential structure fire on Highgate Court that upon arrival, they heard an alarm ringing in the house that turned out to be food on the stove. Other than things just a little bit smelly, and I believe the pot on the stove did not survive, but no other damage. Thankfully to the smoke alarms, it caught it early. We had another potential vehicle fire on Yale that turned out to be nothing more than a broken radiator hose. It was just steam. And then we had another fire I think about a week ago, week and a half ago on Coventry. That also came in as a structure fire. And that turned out to be a wooden compost bin outside a house. The homeowner had dumped in two-day-old barbecue coals, not cola, as I unfortunately wrote in here as a typo, but took two-day-old barbecue coals, thought they'd be cold enough, and dumped them into the corner of the compost pile. And as we have told people many times, with fireplace ash as well as barbecue coals, before you ever dump them in something, soak them, because they can stay hot for an incredible amount of time. The good thing is that it was, you know, within the community, things were pretty much normal as far as call base goes. As far as calls overall, as you are aware, and I think Janice talked about it earlier, we have people all over the state. Our OES engine left 3 weeks ago, a little over 3 weeks ago, went down to the Monterey, lower part of Monterey, for what was called the River Fire. From there, they moved north to the fire in Carmel. From there, they moved north to the fires in Santa Cruz. They were in Boulder Creek for a while. And then a couple of days ago, they got released on that, and they are now at the Creek Fire, the one in Fresno, Madera County, up in the foothills of the Sierras. We also had one of our own engines left 2 days after that one did, and spent 3 weeks up in for a while in Napa County on Lake Berryessa for the Hennessy Fire, and then spent 2 weeks over in Sonoma County on the Wallbridge Fire. And actually, they just got home this afternoon after being gone for 3 weeks. In addition to that, we've had two of our battalion chiefs that are out on overhead. Kevin is up in on this fire that's burning in Butte, and Joe Grappolo has been at the Alameda Fairgrounds working the incident management team there. And then we had another one of our captains that spent 3 weeks up in the Trinity Alps as a fireline medic on the lightning strike fires up there. So a lot of people moving all over, chasing these fires. While a number of them are out, there are, more, it seems like every day, some more light. September, October, we're just getting into peak fire season. And we've already, the state sadly has already hit record number of acres burned. And we're not even close to being done unless the state gets some early rains, which would be good, obviously, for a couple reasons. One, dampen down the fuel and, clean out this smoke out of the air. Because that's, as everyone saw today, what was seen down in the Kensington area stayed the same all the way on my way home up here in northern part of Sonoma County. And if you look at the news, it's pretty much all of Northern California looks just like it does in the Bay Area with the smoke. You don't know if the sun is shining or not. So let's keep our fingers crossed that everything goes well. And things stay quiet here in our own area. Vegetation management, we're continuing with that, getting very good compliance with everybody. We're hoping next month when we come back for the final abatements that there will be zero people on there. There will be, we did file the paperwork for recovery from the county on the abatement costs that we did last year for the district. Paperwork for the district's been, or for Kensington's been filed, as well as El Cerrito. And so, come November, December, when the first tax rolls come in, it wasn't a lot of money that I want to say it was around $30,000 maybe, but that money will be coming back. But the paperwork has been filed for it with it. We continue, and I know one was sent to me a couple days ago, and we continue to get more of these complaints, I guess, where people are, complaining about neighbors. It's another one of those things is, if you truly feel that there's an issue, obviously we want to know, it works best if they call the, on the website, there's the link to get to the fire prevention or to call the main number. The last one, and I believe I sent Mary and Julie a follow-up on it, is just pretty much a neighbor-to-neighbor issue. I mean, the yard's beautiful. Yes, there are green trees on the borderline. They are, you know, they're not dry. They're not dying. They're not imposing a fire hazard. They're not even, you know, like cypress or juniper or, you know, they're some sort of a, you know, green tree. And yes, I mean, I understand all trees burn, but it meets the vegetation policy. It's just strictly one neighbor doesn't like another neighbor's way they landscape, although personally, and that doesn't really matter, but personally, I thought it was a beautiful looking yard. But, you know, like I said, if you don't like it, it's very common for people to, you know, to come out and say that it's a fire hazard. More so it's used for view issues. They'll say those trees are a fire hazard. They have to come down. You know, we're not in the business of you know, making people cut out perfectly good trees unless they are posing a true problem, you know, either dying or too close, you know, on top of a house or, you know, some sort of an issue like that with it. So, but anyway, you know, the good thing is the majority of the people in the community are complying with the letters and notices that we sent out. Another thing with September. September is National Preparedness Month. That is, you know, something, you know, I don't know if you want to put it on the website. There's the link at the bottom of the report I sent in. You know, they have a whole little spiel that you can cut and paste, you know, if it's worthwhile to put out there. But, you know, it's something, you know, kind of ties into everything else we've been talking about of, you know, people being, you know, being prepared to go, you know, not only just for fires or earthquakes, being prepared for any type of a disaster. A lot of good information at that website for it. Last on the list, this is something that was brought up last month, is the emergency operation plan. And then this was talked about last month, and I told you I'd bring back a report for this month. I know I emailed to Mary, and I believe you put it on the website, Mary, or you shared it somehow with the board, that we've got back it's pretty much what they call a 90%. There's a few little things that need to be, you know, some questions that they're asking, but for the most part, you know, they've got the first run for us to read through on this emergency operation plan. And quite honestly, just because we've had so much other things going on with the fires and dealing with those issues, I have not had a chance to read it all the way through. But, you know, we will get to the reading. All of you are obviously welcome to read through it. If you have questions or comments, you know, send them to me. But we're hoping, providing things calm down here in a little bit, I'm hoping by next month we'll have this finalized. We'll have the what they call job tools, which are like the check-off sheets that go with the emergency operation plan. We were planning on doing some kind of a drill in the fall. I'm thinking that's probably not going to happen. We may do something virtual. What's that?
A Zoom drill?
No. Well, yeah, we could do that. You know, they probably cancel it if we're trying to work with the county. But no, I was looking more for us to, you know, do an emergency operations center drill with, you know, between the city and the district, you know, to basically do a run through on the emergency operation plan, just strictly for the training of it, because it's always good to do it. But, you know, the fact that we are, you know, trying to do quarantine, I don't know, we might get creative and come up with something, you know, in November again, if things slow down here with the fires. And, you know, we may try something virtual, but if nothing else, you know, the plan is here. You know, this, the company that did the Tetra Tech, who does a lot of work for the county, matter of fact, I think it was mentioned earlier that, you know, they're doing management of some grant stuff for this county as well as this county's emergency operation plan. They also have done a number of other cities that have faced these emergencies, such as City of Santa Rosa. They did their emergency operation plan right after the Tubbs fire to deal with their inefficiencies that they had. So It's a different approach. You know, this is a more, instead of being a 4-inch thick binder, this is 81 pages long. It's kind of broke up more. It's more check sheet type stuff than a bunch of verbiage to put you to sleep at night. It gets right down to the nuts and bolts about what you should be thinking about, what you should be looking, the areas from the moment that you might have to open up the emergency operations center to the continuity of business, or, you know, keeping the, you know, which is more so as far as fire department is concerned, keeping not only dealing with whatever disaster we're dealing with, but we can't forget that, that we're still going to have people that, you know, are going to get ill, people that may have, you know, some other type of an emergency that are not involved in the disaster. So we have to keep, we have to have a plan to put that together. From the city standpoint, we're still going to have people that want to come in for permits. You know, life has to go on while you're dealing with the disaster, unless we're dealing with, you know, a total city and community wide disaster. But, you know, we're hoping that that's, you know, never going to be the case. It's what little bit I've looked through and the work that we've done with them over the last 8 months or 9 months, it's looking good. So a little ways more to go, but it's looking good there. So anyway, unless you have some questions, I'll leave it at that.
Jake, would it be all right with you if we distribute this emergency operation plan to the members of the Emergency Preparedness Committee for their review?
It's a, you know, it's a public document. There's nothing.
I didn't know.
It's just not finished. As long as I know it's not finished.
You think that'd be a good idea?
It's always good to get ideas. I mean, to get feedback from other people looking at it, you know, some more eyes, can't hurt. They might see something, and if nothing else, they may bring up questions we haven't thought about. So, you know, but I mean, it's, you know, and the only thing I can say is if you're not used to dealing with an emergency operation plan, some of it might look, you know, might look Greek to you, so to speak. It might be not understand how it works. So, it's not like a recipe book, you know, turn on computer, log into here. You know, it deals with the fact that, you know, that it takes for granted that people have a certain level of training and a certain amount of ICS knowledge. And obviously, a lot of it, you know, whether you're dealing with a district, a city, that you have knowledge, you know, working knowledge of, of how your own operations go, your own protocols, guidelines and stuff. But again, it is a public document. When it is totally done, it will be permanently posted on both websites. So, you know, feel free.
Great. That sound like a good idea, Kevin?
I'd be, you know, pleased if they would consider any comments that people had to bring in.
Yeah.
So I, you know, completely would be grateful for that. Chief, I had just one question. I know that our people didn't answer this call, but I believe on about August 18th, there was a fire in Tilden Park in the afternoon that Berkeley responded to. Do you know where that is in Tilden Park?
If it's the one I'm thinking about, we did respond to it. We just didn't get to it.
Right, you got your call off, right, yeah.
All I know, I mean, I saw the picture. I believe it was down. The picture that I saw that Berkeley had sent, it was by a walkway. It was probably about, I don't know, I know some people posted it was like 20 by 20. I would say it was, you know, that was being very generous in size. The only thing I can tell you, it was by a walkway because, you know, it was next to like a cement stairs that went up to something with like a pipe rail or, right. And it was just pretty much, it was just mowed grass right around this one structure. But I can find out exactly where it was. I just know that, it was close. I don't know if it was, close to the Brazilian room or if it was closer to our side to, where the merry-go-round or any of those places are. But it was, as most things down there, when it comes in for a fire. We are sent, Berkeley is sent, as well as Moraga comes in, because in reality, and East Bay Park for that matter, even though it's East Bay Park property, Berkeley's closest to it, but in reality, it's in Moraga's fire district. So they are the authority with jurisdiction there to do the investigation and, you know, and do the final report for it. I can find out the information for you.
You mean like the Shasta station in Berkeley?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I think that's station 7, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Yeah.
So we have about an hour left. It's around 9 o'clock. Janice or Don, do you have any comments for Chief Pagoni or questions?
No, it was a good report.
Wonderful to know that he and his firefighters are always in our thoughts and prayers, but especially
at appreciate these that.
Couple times, and we so appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Excellent comment. All right, let's just quickly see if there are any public comments. I don't see any hands raised. So thank you very much, Chief Pagoni, for your report. Let's move to item 7.2, reviewing the final version of the letter regarding the cameras on Bulmer Peak.
Can I talk to that real quick? That was I forgot to mention that.
Sure.
If I could talk to that real quick. And this is not to discourage doing the letter. But I have been, as well as some other people, we have spoke with the Confire dispatch and with Chief Pigeon, who is the assistant chief in charge of the communications center, has been in touch and with the alert wildfire people, and also with, and unfortunately I don't remember his name, but he's a police officer with Lafayette that's very much involved in a lot of these camera installations. And they talked to him about, you know, what was mentioned about taking one of the cameras and pointing it up Wildcat Canyon. And what they have come up with right now, it's open for change. You know, one of the concerns that they have with the camera, you know, they obviously want it to be as big of a use as they can anywhere. But what they have done for right now is they have programmed it that if nobody is tasking it, which is basically means nobody's logged in and moved it to look somewhere else for whatever reason, or there's no fires in the area, they have it where it's not looking straight up Wildcat Canyon, but it's basically looking the left side of the view of the camera view is looking up left side. And then the right side is able to catch the ridge lines and, you know, going all the way over into Barone's. And so if nobody has moved it, it will always default to look. And, you know, I was looking at it this afternoon before the meeting, and you can see the majority of Wildcat Canyon. The one thing they are programming into it is that it will, if somebody tasks and moves it, once they have logged out, you know, for whatever reason they move it, and they may be because to look at a fire, within 1 hour, it will self-move back to that preset area. And so looking at it, my only suggestion, and I'm going to get in touch with them tomorrow, is if they can tweak it just a touch more to the left. It catches like down almost to the Wildcat Canyon Road in the bottom. You know, if it went just a touch more, you know, I think it would be very beneficial. But that is, you know, that is basically what Alert Wildfire has agreed to. You know, not taking in or basically not discounting the fact that they wanted to be able to see as much of that park as they can with it. So I wanted to let you know about that. And then the other thing is Lafayette PD has a remote camera that's mounted to a trailer. and they are trying to work out a deal with East Bay Parks to put it up at the old Nike base, which would look, and it would be dedicated to look straight down into basically at the back of Kensington and El Cerrito, to put it there during the summer. And Confire would basically pay for the remote internet service there. They're running into some hassles with East Bay Parks. I'm planning tomorrow to get hold of to the chief there and say, hey, you know, is there a way you can, you know, kind of cut through some red tape here? Because, I mean, they were talking, putting fence around it, pouring a cement pad, and it's like, come on. You know, we're talking a temporary thing during, you know, during peak fire for it. And then the other thing they've mentioned that, you know, if there's some locations, you know, that people know about, and even if it's private property, but somewhere, you know, that that has a good view, you know, not just a narrow view, but, you know, has a good view, you know, and preferably has power and has internet, you know, they will consider other locations. You know, whether, you know, we find funding for it or, you know, they have some independent funding that, you know, keeps putting these cameras in. It's just a matter of finding a location that works, you know, that they want something high. They want something that's not, you know, obstructed by, that's not obstructed by trees that, you know, can be used, you know, to swing around if it needs to look at other areas. But, you know, if it's something that the district, you know, kind of sponsors, you know, they have a little bit more, you know, basically you have a little more leverage to sit there and go, hey, we're doing this for you. This is where we want it to look. If it's not being used, to look at something else. So anyway, again, that's not to take away from the letter, but this is some stuff that came out of the county fire chiefs today that we discussed.
Okay, so maybe there's a question of whether we need the letter. The reason that I brought the letter back to the board was somehow when it came to me to sign, I had made some grammatical changes. The board pretty much agreed that I could sign it as long as I didn't change the essence of what we had discussed the last time. But somehow it was inserted in there that the Emergency Preparedness Committee was going to organize a neighborhood watch program. And Chief Pagoni and I agreed that the board had not discussed or agreed to that. So I thought it would be better to take the letter back to the board. And now it says the community may be willing. So someone changed it again. I didn't put that there. So I'm not sure who's been handling the letter. I made a lot of these changes, but that was my concern, that I didn't think the board had agreed that the Emergency Preparedness Committee was going to do that. So
the committee, you're right, Julie, the committee never said that. I like it the way it is. It seems fine with me. I'm very happy for the chief's support for this, because the residents up there are very concerned that at present, either you can't get the camera or the camera's not being positioned the way that it catches the slope that goes up to Kensington. And they really feel that because of the proximity of the houses to that part of the slope, that any place that could be ignited is really something that should be watched. And so just a really slight change in angulation would do it. And that's really what they're asking for. And I know they, you know, other people individually have talked with Chief Bouchard, and this is, I'm really glad that the chief is willing to push this. And I think the board should do this as well, so that everyone seems agreed to help with it, because this is the main line of defense and observation. It can't be any more important than this.
All right. Do I have a motion regarding the letter?
You need a motion, did you say, Julie?
I think, yeah, we need a motion to review. If we're going to go ahead and send the letter, we need a motion to approve this version of the letter to send.
I make a motion that the board approves this letter to Chief Bouchard, and request the president to sign the letter and have the chief sign the letter and send it off.
Second.
All right, any other board discussion, comments? Don, Janice?
No, that's fine.
Okay, we have a hand raised in the public, Mr. Spaff, Dr. Spaff, Dave Spaff.
Where is he? Oh, am I on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, a couple things. One, I think reference to Tilden Park should be in that letter, because if you look at the camera as it's cited, both now, as Chief Bergoni mentioned, that it doesn't cover all of Wildcat Canyon, and it misses a good part of Tilden Park, particularly on the upslope side to Kensington, misses all of the eucalyptus grove down in the center of the Tilden Park area. So I think it would be useful and helpful to put Tilden Park in there as well. And I something mentioned last time, I know, I guess Chief Bergoni is willing to sign it, although since he's had all these discussions and has gotten agreement to tweak it all, I just wondered why he would want to be a signatory as opposed to just having Julie be the signatory, but that's his choice in the matter.
All right, Paul Moss's hand is up.
Am I unmuted?
You are unmuted.
Okay, I wasn't before, thanks. I would just like to piggyback on what Dave was talking about and go back to something I mentioned at an EPC meeting, which I have learned more about very recently. And in summary, I mentioned the residence up on Mira, it's called Vista Heights Road, which is, I guess, home to these Mira Vista condominiums. I drove up there the other day for the first time in all the years I hiked back up in there. I'd never driven up that private road. It goes for 0.3 miles right along that ridge line overlooking Wildcat Canyon. You have about a 180-degree view of the slopes below it, not as good as the slopes on the other side, but still they're two stories up right on that ridge. I talked to a homeowner there, a condominium owner. I just happened to see him walking on the street. He was very friendly, talked to me for about 15 minutes, gave me the said, first of all, the people up there are very conscious of the fire danger. They're right in its path. But he didn't think, he wasn't sure, because he's a part-time resident. He spends half his year there and half in San Francisco. He said that the people up there are very conscious of the fire concern. He gave me the name of the homeowners association lead. So I have her name, which I could convey to Chief Bergoni. And I think that would be an ideal place to look for community help to survey that area. They are right, there are no places closer than they are. It's just that simple, if you know where that is. It's just off Rifle Range Road where it makes a sharp turn to the west, and that's where those condominiums are. You can't see them from the Arlington or anything like that. There are approximately 100 units up there, half of them being elevated. So you can just imagine the view they have. When I drove up there, I have a great view just from my car. It would be good. So I'm just encouraging someone to pick this up and send somebody up there to see if the Homeowners Association has or could develop a group of community volunteers that would be willing to help visually survey that area, especially on red flag alert days. It's, I think, a gold mine for community participation. Maybe I'm wrong. I know it's a more of a working community than any kind of retirement community. So as Chief Bergoni indicated to me last time, you go up there during the day, you won't see a lot of people around, but this guy assured me it's not empty. So I just would like to put that out there as a possible real source of perhaps immediate help, like for this fire season, not something we have to wait for 3 or 6 months when we're in the middle of the winter and it's raining.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see any other hands raised. So if there's no further comment from the board, then I believe it was your motion, Larry, right?
Yes.
I will call for the vote on Larry's motion. I'm in favor. Kevin?
Yes, in favor. Thank you.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Larry?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, everyone. That carried. So we move to 7.3, reporting back on the Zone Haven subscription. If you remember, we asked Mary to look into having Kensington be included as part of a larger subscription that El Cerrito may be considering. And so Mary, would you and we together like to report back on your findings?
Sure, I'll start and then I can turn it over to the chief. After that board meeting, I worked with Chief Bagoni, and they have now proposed an agreement specifically for the best way to approach this would be for the city of El Cerrito to enter into an agreement and include Kensington in that count, such that the combined cost would be $14,000. And then that would be a decrease of $2,380 from the original cost of $7,000. So the district's share would be $4,620 as opposed to the individual $7,000 that we received a proposal from Zone Haven on. And how this would work would be a fee schedule amendment from the city of El Cerrito. So they would alter the fee to incorporate that rather than us, the district, entering into a separate agreement with Zone Haven. So the agreement would be handled through the city of El Cerrito. And maybe I can turn it over to Chief for any additional information that you'd like to add.
I mean, you pretty much have hit on the points with it. It's just the one thing to keep in mind is, as I believe they had indicated a couple months ago, is when the funds come available for the countywide grant, the UWASI grant, and I mean, it's been approved. They're just waiting for the funds to come in. Is they basically from that point on will pick up the costs for it. You know, that could be very early next year. You know, so this would be a deal where, you know, if we pay them for and this comes through, they'll prorate and basically return the money back to us because they'll let the grant pay for everything. But, you know, when all of this was done and, you know, they don't know how soon the grant money comes in, you know, sometimes because this comes from the federal to the state to the county and then gets distributed, you know, sometimes it can take a while for it to get done with it. So, you know, with a little bit of luck, it, you know, won't even cost that much. It'll be less than that.
So in the interest of time, I'd like to first see if anyone would like to make a motion on this. Because we did discuss it quite a bit the last time.
I would like to make a motion not to move on this contract at present because I have concerns about it. And I think that for the time that the chief is suggesting, it's not worth our while to pay anything for it if the county is going to be picking up on it very soon. Also, Mary, what is the percentage of the costs that Kensington is supposed to be bearing?
It's 33 and a third.
Yeah. Well, 33 and a third. So there are 17 polygon zones. Kensington occupies three and parts of two others. Kensington has about 1/5 or 1/6 the population and 1/6 or 1/5 the area. It seems too much to pay for this service, which we can discuss whether or how useful it might be for us in case of a necessary evacuation. I don't think we've ever really plumbed that factually, but we do have some evidence about that. And I just don't think we should spend the cost on it. We should just move in with El Cerrito when the county takes it over. So that's my motion.
Can you restate your motion?
My motion is that we table this. I would like to get legal review on it as well because the contract is very complex and I don't know what they're providing us.
Do I have a second motion?
Failing a second, I would like to propose that we approve the proposed subscription agreement between the city of El Cerrito and Zone Haven, which is meaning that we pay our general 33 1/3 percentage of the cost El Cerrito incurs as part of our contract reconciliation.
Do I have a second to Janice's?
Yeah, Don. I second that motion.
Oh, I think Don beat you to it, Larry.
Okay.
No problem there. I will call for any comments on Janice's motion.
This is, the president, it's not part of a contract reconciliation. Okay. It's a separate agreement. And I'm surprised that you don't want to go proportionally with this, as the area and the zones and the population.
Well, I think the important part,
we've never done it in the El Cerrito contract. We have one station of three, so we always pay one third.
Yeah, but this is not a station.
And I think my point would be that we have about 80% of the wildland urban interface of the here. So I think we're getting a bargain. El Cerrito basically has a very small amount of exposure to the wildland urban interface.
So I agree with the comments that Janice and Larry made. Also, it's less expensive for us, even though it's 33%, it's less expensive for us to go in on this than to go on our own. And we do have, in my opinion, the benefit of the fact that El Cerrito's legal counsel is reviewing the subscription and handling any kind of liability, indemnity, whatever issues come up. And then finally, in the context of our earlier first agenda item tonight regarding evacuation, Chief Pagoni, I believe you told me that with the lightning fires, that they used the Zone Haven software to evacuate 60,000 people in San Mateo.
The San Mateo, because the evacuations were both in San Mateo County and Santa Cruz County. San Mateo County is set up with it. Santa Cruz is not. So I mean, it was, I don't know what the portion of, but basically on the San Mateo side, this was used, but, you know, through their community warning system.
All right. So let me see if we have any public comment on Janice's motion for us to proceed with this. And I'm not seeing any hands raised. So we can go ahead and call the vote. I vote in favor of Janice's motion. Kevin?
No, I'd prefer to table it.
So it's no. Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The motion carries. The next item is a review of the format of the monthly financial reports. I'm not exactly sure what the action would be, but I will let you handle this action item, Mary.
All right. So this was added at the request of Director Kosel, and I've included the monthly financial reports. And I believe the request was made in the last few months and over transitions. The financial reports have been in a variety of formats, not necessarily those which we have listed in policy 6, which is the monthly financial reports. So we located which version that is in the software. There are a lot of different versions, and included the detail reports as they're prescribed for the current month. And that would be with a trial balance and all the detail that follows, the revenue expense, annual budget versus actual year to date. And the previous year comparison is next. Along with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. And then I've included, since we don't have this on consent, to also approve the monthly financial report once any questions are addressed.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, can I just tell you why I asked Mary to add this to the agenda? For 25 years, we've always had financials that compared existing expenditures against the actual budget and compared this year's expenditures to the previous year. Under RGS, we were not getting those reports for the first time in 25 years. When they submitted financials, they were always 3 or 4 months late. And I believe that our expenses went out of control under RGS because we did not get that information. I don't know whether the finance committee got it, but I know that the board never had that information. And that's one reason why we're in the pickle we're in now. So I am asking that we return to the format we had prior to last November 1st.
Any other discussion?
I agree with Janice on that. Since I'm only a part-time accountant, I don't really think that there's any point in us reviewing the trial balance. But definitely the revenue and expense report and the balance sheet should be part of every month's agenda, in my opinion.
And I think we also need to see the reserves so that we know where we are.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the balance.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's like the bottom of the second page. Yeah.
So do you need a motion, Julie, or is this just informative?
Well, the motion is actually to, unless anybody's disagreeing about the format question, but that is our policy to use this format. So my understanding is the motion would simply be to approve the monthly financial report because this was not in the consent calendar as it usually is, just for the sake of discussing the format. So the motion would be to approve the report. Is that what you need, Mary?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you. Okay, I make a motion that we approve this financial report to be made at every board meeting once a month.
I think you want to approve this month's report with the understanding that the format will be similar in future months.
Yes.
Then I'll second your motion, Larry.
All right. Any other board discussion? Can you just hold on till we vote, Don? I also need to take a quick break.
I'm going to find a place for my dog, so I'll wait.
Okay. Board discussion on this? All right, then. Any public comment on this motion? All right, then. I vote in favor, Kevin.
Yes,
I do. Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
And Larry?
Yes.
Okay. Our next item is going to be the public safety financing and decision plan. I just need to refill my water, take a very quick break.
Can we take a 5 minute break or so?
5 minute break. I'll set my timer.
Our house, and so I was able to just run back to my office and get on with you all here.
Lucky you.
So it looks like all the board members have returned from the break. So let's turn it over to you, Brent. I think we don't have written copies of your report because
they're okay.
Later. So if people haven't opened it in their email, they probably haven't seen it. So you might want to just go through
fair enough
details.
I believe that I'm going to, I sent it to Mary, I'm sure. Right, Mary?
Yes, and it's in the electronic packet. I can actually share my screen if you would like.
Why don't you do that? Thank you. I appreciate that. Otherwise,
Sure. Let me get it to large. And then...
Where did you say this document was?
It's on the website in the packet.
It was my report for the month.
7.9 is the item.
7.9, okay. It's all in right. The packet, you say.
Yeah, it just didn't get in the...
an addendum.
Yeah.
Why I don't have this here.
I want to share this one. Okay, there. Are we seeing the screen of his report?
There it is.
Yes, okay.
There it is. Okay, can I, Madam President, may I proceed?
Oh, of course.
Okay, thank you. So you'll notice that there's the general introduction there about when you brought me on, and we began recruiting for both positions. But the real meat of the report is in the bullet points. You'll notice that on August 14th, the posting closed for the position. There were 11 candidates that applied. I reviewed all the 11, naturally. And three of them were in what I call the C level. Those are just clearly not qualified. They just were managers of other kinds of things, cell phone stores and so forth. B candidates were marginally qualified, meaning they could do the job, but they weren't as qualified as the five that were in the A candidate box. And so what I did is I did a deeper dive on all of those eight. And then I met with the committee. I sent them all the information on the eight. And I told them, and it was clear from their review, I gave them some time with it. It was clear from their review as well that they had picked out the same five that I had picked for being the top five. At that point, we decided we should see them for a kind of a meet and greet meeting. Scheduled them, Mary, if you'd go up just a little bit, please. I scheduled them for, it's a whole nother page. Oh, there you go. I scheduled them for that's too far, sorry.
Okay.
I scheduled them for a Zoom meeting. We talked to all five of them for like 30 minutes just to get to know them a little better. And you're over here. I'm sorry. Of the five, four of them stood out as being of the caliber to send to the whole board, which is what we're requesting now, is that we begin the process of sharing all the information that the four have submitted and share that with you all and set up a time to interview those four candidates. I believe that the committee and I both agree that we're pretty excited about these four. Any one of them can do this job. They have different qualities and different experiences and different backgrounds, but they all happen to be at a place in their careers where this works out for them. And so that is a real positive thing. This is exactly, I think, where we needed to be at this time. And so I'm really happy that we have these to present. What I need is your endorsement of my proposed plan, which would be tomorrow I'd set up a shareable file for all of you where you could go on and look at these resumes and their cover letters and so forth. And then that we schedule the Zoom meetings, interviews. That way I can get with the candidates and go ahead and schedule those. You'll have all the information beforehand. Along with sharing that candidate information, I'd also send along some interviewing tips and a list of interviewing questions that you can pick from and send back to me your four or five interview questions that you'd like to consider, and then all put together the interviews, and we'll have a little time before they start so that we'll organize how we're going to do the interviews, because it's going to be a Zoom kind of thing. I recommend that we try to do those interviews on the 17th and 18th of this month. And if we need follow on after that, if we narrow the four down to two, or if you like one in particular, if you agree, you can move ahead and you can, those interview, closed session interviews would be agendized though, so that you could you could make a selection if you chose to do so with those interviews. So that's moving fairly quickly, but the reason I think is because that would put you in a position, if you were able to make a decision on the 17th and or 18th on one of these candidates or after a follow-on, you could actually have it on you could begin the contract negotiation. We could talk about that after the candidates got off, the basics of a contract offer. And I would hand that contract offer off to your attorney, and that could be actually on your agenda for October. So that's a lot of words. I hope you were able to keep up with me there. I'm open to questions.
I have a question. So
is this going to be something where all of us interview each candidate?
Yes. All five of you would be, and myself, would be on with the candidate. And there would be a script, and we would follow that script, the same script for all four candidates. Then we see if we can decide, or not we, but you. I would facilitate the decision process once you're done with all five of them. What I'm recommending is that you interview two on the evening of the 17th and two the morning of the 18th, giving us some time on the 18th to have the discussion. Is one of them the person for you? And then I just take it from there. If it's yes, then I would follow on, and it would basically go to your attorney to begin working on contract language that you and I would have already had basic discussions.
Grant, I have a conflict on the 17th. I'm not available on the 17th. I can be available the afternoon of the 18th, and in fact, I can be available the entire day of the 18th, but okay. The 17th is not good.
I don't even have my calendar in front of me, so maybe we can all confirm availability tomorrow morning after we have our calendars.
Okay, let's look at this. In that case, let's look at the 16th, 17th, and 18th, and if we have to separate by a day, it's not the end of the world. I like to keep them as close together as possible so we have a good comparison. You know, if you see them four in a row as close as possible, it's best. But it's not mandatory. It's just a nice thing to do if you can. But I think what separating one day wouldn't be the end of the world if we've got a couple in.
The 16th would work for me as well as the 18th.
The 16th and 18th?
Yeah.
I'll have to look at my calendar, which is upstairs. I'm going to ask you a question that you may or may not be comfortable answering, Brent. What was the problem with candidate number five, where they were thrown out when you found five acceptable and now we're down to four? What was the
right
problem with number five?
His style, we didn't of communication, it wasn't felt would be conducive to Kensington. And actually it was proven when I talked to him after, to me, Julie and Kevin don't even know this, but I talked to all the candidates after that, and he didn't exhibit the kind of traits that I think would have been and echoing what the committee had thought as well, that I thought would have been conducive. In fact, I would have been asking you to take him off if he were still on, after he reacted the way he reacted to the news of not going forward in the process. But he on paper and in my discussions with him, I could see him as being somebody that could fit, but it turned out that his style of communication and just his method of what he thought the roles were between an executive and a board, it ended up were not what I would call conducive. Wouldn't have helped you guys, I don't think, much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so Brent, you're looking for a motion to endorse your process. your proposed process. Is that
correct? Correct. And then I would work with Mary to set up interviewing times to make sure that you all were available on those times. And then once I got those times locked in, then I schedule the candidates in.
Why don't we all email Mary tomorrow morning before noon and let her know our availability on the 16th, 17th, and 18th, Ben?
All right, so can I, does anyone want to make a motion to endorse the process that Brent proposes?
I make a motion that we approve the process that Brent Ives has just proposed.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion on the board? All right, any public comment on this matter? 15 people still on the line. Okay, then, I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much, Brent.
Thank you, board. You're doing a great job here, and I'm really happy with these four. I think you will be too. The nice thing is I think it'll be an interesting, difficult decision because they're all really good people.
Good.
Okay. See you when I see you then. Probably on the 16th, I hope.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay. All right. We have 15 minutes left. I'd like to know if anyone objects if we move first to the office space item 7.6. Okay. I'm not hearing an objection. And the reason that I mentioned that is I think it's important for us to talk about this. In the packet, Mary has done a survey of available spaces in Kensington. Janice, you mentioned the conference room earlier, and it does seem like something we should talk about because I think the reason that Mary and I agreed we should advance this item for the board to consider is that Mary's recruiting for two part-time individuals, and we're recruiting for a general manager. And I can tell you that my experience when we moved all of Brenda's things out of her office to the conference room, and she was onboarding RGS there. RGS was working there. Debbie would come in occasionally, and it was very chaotic because the police would often need to use the room at the same time they were working there. They would have to leave if the police needed to interview someone. So I think we'd need, my opinion is that to use that room, we'd either have to partition it or we would need some other kind of basically structural change to the first floor of the public safety building. But I open it out to all your comments.
Well, I think it's going to be $40,000 or $50,000 to go outside the building. So I recognize it's not a perfect space, but it saves $40,000 or $50,000. So that would be my suggestion.
Mary, I think the estimate that you have now is 30 to 35.
Yes, correct.
That space that Don looked at was $4,000 a month, I believe.
They've dropped that. It's evidently a tenant's market with rents, and so that space on Arlington would be around $35,000 a year. And there's another space that's actually kind of comparable on Colusa, and I believe the space is around $30,000 to $35,000 as well.
Before you go any further on the Arlington space, I suggest you talk to the realty that used to occupy it, as I've heard very negative comments about that space as an office facility.
Okay.
They told me they would not
recommend. Do you know the space that we have that we're talking about?
Yes, I do.
And what way are you condemning it?
Oh, they said that a conversation at one desk could be heard at all other desks, and that you got a lot of exterior noise from outside, and that the bathroom was totally unworkable. So they could not recommend it as an office space.
I'm surprised.
The one that
I suggest you talk to the people who were there. I didn't work there, but people who did were very unhappy with the space. That's why they're not there anymore.
No, that's not why they're there anymore. That person decided to do a different, to go to work for someone rather than have his own business.
Are you talking?
I don't know that we're talking about the same space, to tell you the truth.
Talking about the optometrist space at Calusa Circle.
Yes.
Janice is talking about the space.
About the one on the Arlington.
What, say again?
I'm talking about the one on the Arlington.
280.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a question. We haven't yet decided as a board whether or not the police department and the fire department are going to be co-located in this building, have we?
No.
So isn't it a little premature to go out looking for office space? Because we'll have plenty of office space if only the fire department is located in the public safety building.
Correct.
They do not want us in the building. They want it to be strictly fire and police or fire. They do not want others. The building is too poorly arranged to do that way, and they don't want to have it mixed up.
Who is they?
They, in this case, is the fire chief. He's made it perfectly clear.
Office?
And I think that
Don't, I have never said I did not want office people in there. What I talked about not wanting office is upstairs with the COVID going on where Brenda used to be. If you're remodeling and making office space down below, I have never been against that. So please do not put those words in my mouth, Don. We never had the conversation about staff being down below. That has never been our conversation. We only talked about Brenda's old office. So you got to keep this stuff straight if you're gonna go there.
I believe.
I'm normally a very nice guy.
I heard something different from you, I think, because I think it was pretty clear that you did not want other people in the building. You wanted to have it strictly for yourself. And right now, given the situation, when you certainly wouldn't want them in the building.
If it is a total different office space down below where they're not commingling in basically the living quarters, I have absolutely no problem with that. What I have been very firm about is that I want office space for my officers there, for the captains, as opposed to working in the bedroom. I've been very adamant about getting them out of the electrical room for working. I've also been very adamant that we need a decontamination area, and we also need a conference room of some sort. As far as sharing with staff, whether it's one person, two people, or three people, we have never had that conversation. We've only had the conversation of, and this was when RGS was there, and the potential of when Mary was coming on, and you know, before the COVID got so bad, about using Brenda's old office, about bringing people up there.
If that's the case, then I think Larry's correct, and it's premature to make any decision about renting space outside the building when we don't know if we're going to need to house our administrators outside the building. So I will now move to table item 7.6, and a motion to table is non-debatable if I get a second.
I second that motion.
You have to have four votes to approve the non-debatable part.
I second Janice's motion.
Okay, so I don't think it's non-debatable though. You're making a motion to postpone this item. Tabling is if a motion's already made. You're making.
Okay, then we postpone leasing space outside the building until we determine whether or not we need to.
All right, Larry, did you want to second the revised
motion? Yes, I second the motion to postpone this item 7.6.
So we can have discussion of this. My concern is even the option A, which is fire only, we still cannot be in the building when the renovation is going on. So
no, you can't. Nobody can. Nobody can be in the building during the renovation.
It's only temporary space, not permanent space. I don't think Larry and I would object to making temporary arrangements, but we don't even know when the temporary begins, since we haven't decided who's going to be in the building and what the financial arrangement is. So I don't know how you can lease temporary space when you don't know when it begins.
Or when it ends.
Correct.
Well, I guess my concern is where will we put these three new, three individuals in the meantime? It's really suboptimal to put them in the conference room and I don't even know right now during COVID-19 if they would let us be in the conference room.
Well, you're assuming that they're all going to be on site.
You are going to be out of the building for about a year and a half or more.
But not for another year or more.
Less than that. I mean, this thing has never stopped sliding. But I would think, I think that we have gotten to a point, and Mary can maybe reinforce this, that we're pretty close to making a deal, wouldn't you say?
Well, I guess that's...
Or is it hard to know?
I think that would depend on any decision made.
On which?
I think that would be a different discussion on a different item. I don't have a feel for that yet. I know that the renovation...
No. In other words, someone asked about when can we start construction, when can we end?
Oh.
And so...
I think you're about right.
I think
right.
We're getting closer than we've ever been.
I would say correct.
Yeah.
Just depends on the decision made, but yes.
All right, so the motion on the table is a motion to postpone this agenda item. And we have a second. So Kevin, did you have any comment on the motion?
No, I think what you said is really right. If we bring new people on board soon, we've got to have some place for them and for the office stuff. I don't know where the best part would that be, but I think Mary's looking for it, and that's the best we can do at present. And if we're going to hire people soon, we have to have space for them soon.
All right. So
remotely now.
So let's see if there's any public comment on the motion to postpone. I'm not seeing any hands raised.
No, they need to have a place to go. And I think, and that would be within relatively maybe 6 months at the max. I would hope the construction drawings can be done about that time if we can make a deal. So you could put it off for six. Well, there would be no place for them to go.
They would have to work from home, right? For the first 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think that's what we want to do, but we would hopefully have a chance to switch in the early part of next year.
So we've got 4 minutes left. So first, I probably should have done this before we started this item. I'd like to see if anyone is willing to make a motion to extend the meeting.
I'm not.
Okay, anyone else willing to make a motion to extend the meeting? Well, so then we're by default, I think, postponing this item and the rest of the items on the agenda. So do I have a vote on the motion to postpone this item? I oppose it. Kevin?
Sorry, I'm going to post it to Julie. I think we should go ahead and look around for space.
We have done a thorough look around for space.
He's opposing the motion to postpone this. He's not opposing looking.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Okay.
I don't think it, I think it doesn't make any difference because we are going to have to meet again all the same.
Right. But okay.
You're going to have to find space for people pretty soon. Okay.
So what's your vote, Don, on the motion to postpone this item?
It's fine. It doesn't matter what it is.
Is that a yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're in favor of postponing it?
We're ending it now, so we're going to start it again. So sure, yes.
Janice.
Aye.
Larry.
Aye.
Okay, so can I have a motion to, so I had no motion to extend the meeting past 10, is that correct?
Correct, so I think a motion to adjourn is in order since it's 9:58 on my computer.
Yes, and we haven't finished the agenda. All right.
I don't think we want to discuss this at this time of the day.
Yes.
There's a little more to talk about, so.
No problem. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second?
I second it.
All right, any discussion on that? Okay, public comment. All right, all in favor, I'm in favor of adjourning. Kevin?
I'm in favor of adjourning, but we still have to consider emergency preparedness items, which we put off for now for 2 months.
Well, no one made a motion to extend the meeting.
Well, we weren't gonna get the votes.
Okay, so you voted in favor of adjourning?
I do.
Okay, Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, thanks everyone. The meeting is adjourned.
Night.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.